Palestinian life in occupied Hebron. Hebron is a troubled city in the southern part of the West Bank of Palestine. It is unique from other Palestinian towns because it has five Israeli settlements which sit right in the middle of the city. These settlements, created from buildings where Palestinians have been violently evicted, are illegal under international law. The army maintains a constant presence in the city and often turns a blind eye to crimes committed by fundamentalist Jewish settlers. As a result of the 1997 Hebron Accords, part of the Oslo process, Hebron was divided into two areas. H1 is Palestinian-controlled, and H2, consisting of the old city and all the settlements, is Israeli-controlled. Zalika Muhtaseb is a resident of the old city of Hebron. She is a community activist, an educator, and a friend to many in the area. A few years ago, she founded the Ibrahimi Center for Social Development. Here, she talks about life for Palestinians living in H2, the effects of the occupation on local women, and her work with the children in the community center.
You live in the Israeli-controlled area of Hebron, what we call H2. Maybe you could describe what life is like in general for Palestinians living in this part of Hebron.
Life here is very difficult because we have lots of checkpoints. And maybe you have noticed when you came to my house that there is a big gate which is usually closed whenever the Israelis want, and when there is a curfew, and even when there is no curfew, but there is a Jewish festival, we, the Palestinians who live in this area outside the gate, we are locked in, actually, because of the Jewish holidays. And this is one of the difficulties. The children can't go to school when there is a curfew on our street. People can't go to work, even. When the gate is closed. At night, the gate is usually closed at about 8:30. If we are outside our homes when the gate is closed, and we don't have any other choice but to go from the neighbors' houses, from the roofs, which is very dangerous.
Yeah.
But this is the only option that we have.
How does this affect people, maybe emotionally or psychologically?
It affects us a lot. It's so hard to feel the discrimination. Yani, when I look at the other people and see that they are free to move, free to go everywhere, when I go to the roof and look at the settlers or the Jews celebrating their feasts or holidays, and we are locked in, I feel so depressed for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yani, maybe I can control myself, but not everybody can control himself. Yani, Israel talks about the Palestinians being terrorists. Yani, this kind of thing, keeping us locked inside our homes, creates a lot of anger inside. And not everybody can control his anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yani, this is how people sometimes decide to take revenge or to do any bad thing against the Israelis.
Mm-hmm. Now, the old city of Hebron is a place that's changed a lot over the last little while. Now, when you walk through the old city, a lot of the shops are closed. Maybe you could talk a bit about the old city and the way it was maybe 10 years ago and compare it to how you see it now.
I can compare the old city at different times. When I was young, I used to walk in the old city, even at night, late at night, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, it was safe. Mm-hmm. Because the shops used to keep open until 8 or 9 o'clock. And after that, there used to be still some movement in the streets. People used to do visits or to go home or whatever. But now, from 3 o'clock, almost the streets are empty.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big difference. 10 years ago, the situation was a little bit better because many shops used to be open. But now the shops are closed. Some of them are according to a military order. Yeah, one time I was walking in inside the old city, and there was a group of soldiers asking people to close their shops. I stopped and talked to the soldiers, asking why. They asked, "Who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm a human rights observer. I work with CPT, and I want to find out why you ask people to close their shops." And they said, "Because they are very close to Avraham Avinu settlement." This is not an excuse, Yanni, to destroy people's life for the security of a group of settlers. And these shops are, Yanni, for my information, they are so far away from the settlement. So, Yanni, for myself, I couldn't find any reason why they ask people to close their shops.
Yeah. And the settlements in the old city are being used as an excuse to punish a lot of the Palestinian shopkeepers in the area. And there's frequently a military presence in the old city. Maybe you could talk a bit about what the army does around this part of the city.
The army in the old city usually have patrols, and they are in the streets 24 hours. Whenever they walk, actually, they stop people. And they stop them sometimes for an hour or more. And not only stopping them, sometimes they harass them, they beat them, they make them raise their hands, which is really very tiring, and turn their faces to the walls. This kind of punishment is actually very bad for the people, because it's a kind of insult to ask a man who is sometimes 40, 45, 50 years old to just turn his face to the wall. And the soldier is most of the time like maybe 20, 25. It's a big insult for someone. And they do not do this only to men, but also for women. And many times they stop women in the streets and check them and ask them to stand by the walls for a long time, but it's not like asking them to turn their faces. But stopping women is a big insult for the society, for the women, for everybody.
And it's interesting, because oftentimes we hear of young Palestinian men who are frequently targeted by the army. But maybe you could talk a bit about how the occupation in Hebron affects women as well.
The occupation affects everybody. And for women, when they stop women in the streets, it means that the women will not come from the street anymore. And not only the women, they will ask their family members not to walk in the street where they were stabbed. This is one thing. Another thing, when the army gets into the houses suddenly, they break into the houses without permission for security reasons. This word I hate very much, security, because this is the biggest excuse they use to provoke people, to insult them, to harass them. Like yesterday, the army went into my brother's house in the afternoon, and they searched the house, turned it into a wreck. And why is that? Because it's Friday afternoon. The time was getting closer to Shabbat, Friday evening. And my brother's house is very close to the street that the settlers use when they go to the mosque.
Hebron has many problems with violent fundamentalist settlers who live amongst the city's 140,000 Palestinian residents. On February the 25th, 1994, Baruch Goldstein, an American-Israeli settler, walked into the Ibrahimi Mosque with a machine gun and opened fire on a large group of Muslim worshippers. 30 were killed and many more were injured. Goldstein himself also died in the exchange of fire. Here, Zalika reflects on the anniversary of this massacre.
Yesterday was a significant day because it was the anniversary of the massacre in the mosque. Maybe you could talk a bit about what that means.
It means, for me, it means a lot, because I was inside the mosque when it happened. And you, I will never ever forget it, because when I walk in the street, I imagine the bodies, the people, as if it happened yesterday. It's now 11 years.
Yeah.
But for me, it's 11 hours. It's very difficult. Maybe for people who did not see what happened, they remember it, but it doesn't mean a lot for them. But for me, it's hard to see the bodies, to see the blood, to see the people being killed and shouting, screaming for help. Nobody comes to help. The army did not allow the ambulances to come and get the bodies or get the injured. And for an hour maybe, they were not allowed to get closer to the area. And the army also was shooting at people, not only the settlers, not only Goldstein, as they said, but it was the army who were shooting. For me, when I walk in the street and see the army, I feel a lot of anger inside, because it's the army who represent the government that shot my people. Two of my relatives were shot dead inside the mosque that day. And one of them was a very close friend of mine, not only a relative. I will never ever forget it. I will never ever forgive what happened.
In a way, what happened in the mosque is still, I mean, it feels very much like it's still part of the public consciousness here in Hebron. Since then, they've divided the
building, the mosque.
Into, yeah.
They changed it into a mosque and a synagogue.
What does that mean for you?
It means a lot of frustration, a lot of hopelessness of having peace in the area.
Do you see a chance for the situation improving for Palestinians in Hebron?
It will improve if the settlers are controlled, if the streets are open, if the Palestinians are allowed to go on Al-Shuhada Street, to go from H1 to H2 freely, if the market is open, the wholesale market is open again, if the gates are moved, if all this closure is lifted, then there will be a chance for a big change. Because we, the Palestinians, are willing to live in peace. But maybe you walked inside the old city and in the streets, and you noticed part of the city is like a city of ghosts. It's totally empty.
Yeah.
And the reason, as they say, is for the security of both sides, Palestinians and Israelis. If it's for our security, why are not we allowed to use the same street that the settlers use? But as I said, this word that they use, the security, they use it for their own interests, for the division of the city, for the discrimination between the two people. Why did the Jews live in Hebron before 48 as one nation, as part of the Hebron community? This is the big question. And sometimes the Israelis say, well, the Palestinians in Hebron killed the Jews. No, we did not kill the Jews. We protected them. If we really killed the Jews, why should we protect them? And there are very good relations still between the Jews and the Palestinians. For myself, I have lots of Jewish friends who do not want to take my land, who do not want to take my home, who do not come and say, well, you live here today, but tomorrow we will take your home.
Right now, Abu Mazen is in the process of negotiating with Ariel Sharon, and we hear a lot of talk about the army withdrawing from different cities in the West Bank, like Jericho, Tulkarm. Do you see the same kind of deal being reached right now in these peace talks? Or what do you think of these peace talks right now?
I do not agree much with the peace talks. Mm-hmm. Because when we want to talk about peace, I mean, what kind of peace is that? To have a piece of the West Bank here, a piece of the West Bank there. If you travel around the West Bank, you will see how it is divided. This street is for the settlers. That part is a settlement. This street is not allowed for the Palestinians. This side is closed for the Palestinians. So if you want to talk about peace, as a real peace, there should be a freedom for traveling, for working, for living. Normally, without the checkpoints, without the army being in the streets, without all these punishments against the Palestinians.
I wanted to just kind of shift the focus a bit and talk a bit about maybe some of the initiatives you've been doing in Hebron. You mentioned you ran kind of a community center.
Yeah, actually, my work started at home before I started the center. Because of the curfew, I used to collect the children who were not allowed to go to school. I used to collect them on the roof to play, to come together, to have a safe place with somebody who is guiding them, observing them, kind of protecting them from the soldiers, because the soldiers usually used to come to the roofs and sometimes stop the children and order them to go home. So when I used to bring them together just to kind of having, not makeup classes, but the kind of relief meetings, when the children talk to each other about the situation, it's a big relief for them. Mm. When they draw what they feel, it's a big relief. When they play together also, it's a big relief. That's how we started. Then we started with some psychological support program also at home. And then we moved to this center where I have it now. And the idea is to provide kind of development, the development for the society through education. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of work with children and women. Okay. This is the target group for my work.
What's the center called?
The Ibrahimi Center for Social Development. Yani, for the children, I concentrate on the psychological support because they have suffered a lot from the occupation, and especially during this intifada, because there was a lot of shooting and shelling. And many children were scared. Talking about the children inside my house, I remember one time, one of my nephews got closer to me and they asked, are they going to kill us? When there was a lot of shooting. I said, no, you're here. Actually, I did not want to make him afraid because he was watching TV and watching people being killed. Mm-hmm. So he thought maybe he will be killed like them. This kind of psychological comfort, you can say, or relief, I concentrate on, because once you have a good psychology of children, they can create, they can be leaders, they can learn without problems, they can play without problems. Mm-hmm. This way we can reduce the violence of children. And when the children are relieved, actually the family is relieved, mm-hmm. because they will not fight amongst each other at home. The mothers will be relieved as well, because I did some psychological support for the mothers as well. Mm. Okay. Also, we do a lot of literacy classes for women to try to help them.
And what are the effects that you've seen this take on individuals? Maybe you have some stories of kids who have come out of this feeling.
Yeah, actually, I like this name Muhammad, because many children named Muhammad who used to come to my center, one of them was actually a troublemaker. And many people advised me not to accept him in my center. Because he is a troublemaker, he would affect the other children. But I insisted. And the only way for me is to get him involved in all the activities in the center. and be making him responsible for some of the activities, in like a leader. This way, he was able to overcome all the stress inside him, and he became kind of quiet.
Okay.
Yeah, not very, very quiet, but I reduced a lot of his violence. Instead of beating children, he used to solve the problems amongst the children whenever there used to be some. Yani, this is an example of the work I did. Yani, for other children, I remember another child who was five. She did not want to talk to anybody. Yani, all the time, she used to come to the center and play with the children, but without talking to anybody. And many times when I talked to her, she either, yani, when she answered yes or no, just with gestures, nodding her head and things like this. One time I had a celebration. It wasn't a real celebration, but I wanted to make a kind of a change for the children. And I concentrated on her and brought her other brothers and sisters to the celebration. And I meant to get her involved in one of the activities. After that, she changed. Whenever we asked for anything, she used to raise her hand and answer. And she used to speak normally to everybody.
Mm.
Yani, I was so glad that she changed.
What is your hope for the future of the children of Hebron?
I hope that all the children, no matter who they are, what they are, will get together, yani, to play, to learn, to meet with each other as friends, as human beings, not as enemies. I hope all the best for the children to be safe, to be normal like all other children. You know what? Sometimes I feel so sorry for the Jewish children in the old city, because when I see how they live inside the settlements, it's so bad. To have all the army protecting them, they are not like normal children, from my point of view. Because our children do not have the army protecting them when they go to school or when they come back or when they walk in the street. I think with all the stress that our children have, they are still more free than the secular children.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The sound is so upset.
This report on Palestinian life in occupied Hebron was produced for CKUT Community Radio in Montreal by Aaron Lakoff.
They're swinging in there.